When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did you have air hogs growing up?
I did not have air hogs growing up, Johnny. I always wanted the power of a remote controlled vehicle that would fly.
The air hogs that I had was not remote controlled. You would it was an airplane with a propeller, and you would pump it up with a bike pump. And it would fill a little tank with air, and then you'd spin the propeller and the air pressure would make it spin. And then you just throw it and it goes really far, and then you just have to go pick it up.
And then you never see it again. Yeah.
Perfect toy. Mm-hmm, perfection. Mm-hmm.
It goes out over the highway, and whenever it's over any highway, it immediately drops.
That's air hogs, baby.
That's air hogs.
They're out of control.
Now, that is what we should have called skyjacks, kind of, as air hogs.
Air hogs. Mm.
What if there's we have the Red Feather Syndicate. What if there's just a group of nasty boys and they're the air hogs? Mm-hmm. And I imagine they would be a ship crewed by a bunch of bebops from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
Sure, we already have a Crocodile Man, so why not a bunch of bebops?
Exactly, so we could have a bebop.
Crocodile Man.
Because there is no human body, because in a deal with the Forest Queen, Raoul has given up his human form to the point where it just doesn't exist anymore. All that would remain was his human soul that still lived somewhere in this tangle between these two forms and animal spirits. And that soul would have simply been committed to Rusalka's arms in the river. But Johnny, you can change that.
Could I, in this process, until my next transformation, basically give him my human body?
Damn. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because if he's not going to be immortal, if Rusalka maybe is going to take him anyway, kind of give him my body to get his affairs in order, and then I'll take it back.
This creates some complications. If you might have forgotten, but you're currently in the middle of a bet.
Oh, shit.
Well, he can't do anything that he isn't sure.
Yes, but his failed condition is that I get his body.
Right, but Travis is sure that he's going to get his body back, I guess is essential.
Fair enough.
The thing is, he hasn't lost this bet, even though,
No, he hasn't lost the bet yet. It's just that, obviously, if there is a period of time in between him getting his body is on loan and he loses the bet, do I just wait until the body's back in his possession and I get to cavort in that? Or do I get to be?
I think so. I think ultimately the answer is yes. But we are about, the night is about to be over. The sun will rise. So Travis was going to be in an animal all day. Yeah, there's time. I can't stop thinking of the fan fiction ramifications of these episodes being released, where the deal literally is, I will own your body, Travis Madigan.
Why do you think I said the thing, James DeMarta?
Yeah. Nathan just play into the
I know
crowd
what a fandom wants.
Nathan wants to own a body and get in a hole. We've all been there.
Just
ordinary a zombie has service. Needs, damn it.
Yeah, this is acceptable to me because also this, I think, like if we think back to the hazards of love, there is something about you will grant him this day, which is, yeah, he was previously just going to go into the river with Rusalka. But, with what we know of Rusalka in a mythical context, it is more complicated than that. Yes, Rusalka does seek out people and drown them for their crimes, for their misdeeds. But she also accepts people into the river out of an act of mercy and love. And if we think to Rusalka, you know, that's some sad guy approaching the river out of who knows what emotions, but, you know, offers Rusalka his hand in marriage and she accepts and drowns him kind of very sweetly. And I think that is the position that Raoul was kind of in, just suffering and tasked with maintaining the border between the Forest Queen and the Mariner and Rusalka, and came to love Rusalka in that time. So I think in granting Raoul the day and the form of a man, he is going to be able to spend this time with Rusalka in a way that will be fulfilling and sweet, instead of just being ushered from misery into the river. He will get to taste love, but for a short time at least, before that happens. And I think that is the kind of gentleness, the kind of thoughtful sincerity that can only come from someone who has lived a life that is as long and as cruel as Travis Madigo's has been. And that is the deal that is struck. And so the animal forms that once belonged to Raoul Garou flow into the complicated tangle that is the soul of Travis Madigo. And I think this happens just as the sun starts to peek up over the horizon and it becomes day. Travis, what do you change into?
What season was it before all this, I was a bird before, mm-hmm. right? Most recently?
Yeah, it was autumn.
I'll just be a bird.
Okay, just a bird?
Yeah.
A little bird with little antlers.
I mean, you've unlocked fusions at this point. Like,
I do actually kind of want to layer the fusion on you. Yeah, I think you're a bird with antlers. I think you're a bird with these little white antlers.
The regular size antlers. So I try to fly in my head.
It's too much.
I think we'll say the antlers look extremely grand, but they are within proportion. That doesn't mean it isn't difficult to fly. I think it is extremely difficult to fly.
Well, yeah, because I got hollow bird bones and big, you know, not bird bone antlers.
But you look fantastic. Awesome, I bet.
Yeah.
There's a reason why birds don't have antlers.
There's just the one, yeah.
It's just a single reason.
So, like, we see this like elegant magical girl style transformation as this bird with antlers just majestically. I guess both Orimar and Gable are kind of watching this kind of occur, and Gable, because you're already holding onto Orimar's arm, you feel Orimar's like weight shift, like they're leaning against you. And for a fraction of a second, it's like, oh, it's sweet. Oh, he's putting a lot of pressure on. Oh, he's just tilting over.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
Oh, yeah. I like the idea that he actually just falls like kind of into the sand and like the antlers like lodge in there and he's just kind of flapping. And
I think that as this transformation is happening, it, you know, we're like encircled in a bunch of like water and branches and vines and stuff, so that it shields us from your vision, so that when it all fades away, you still see Travis and then this bird with antlers. So you both are like, oh, Travis turned the little lizard deer into a bird with antlers, not realizing that the Travis is not me. And then I want to look to Raoul and say, well, friend, I must say, you've never looked better.
Raoul, I think, is at a loss, like is looking at human hands and human. I mean, this Travis is not wearing clothes.
So, oh yeah, Terminator like, just, style for sure.
Mm-hmm. Just like looking over a human body for the first time in goodness knows how many decades. And slightly anamorph style. There is no animal brain vying for any part of his being right now. Just aghast. And he looks to you, this raven with antlers, this small piece of godhood, this actual lumen in front of him. And he can't even form the words to thank you. It's in his look alone.
Don't mention it. I thought it was pretty cool too.
Which ones? Because the bird is talking, Travis, but that's also Travis's. Oh no, which are we two of them now? Are there two of them? The two Travises and one of them doesn't like clothes anymore?
Aramad does not respond.
I look to Raoul once more and I'll just say, the rest of the day is your time to do whatever you please. I can leave you here or I can stay with you if you like. It's up to you.
You have already done so much for me. I will make the most of this precious time that you have given us. And he turns to Rusalka and walks into the river. And she embraces him. And the swirling form of her body, because again, you know, she is water, but she is also algae. She is also the white rushes of flowing, raging rapids. She encircles him tastefully. You know, it's just a bit of that HBO nudity that we get. Some really choice, tasteful stuff that is easy to do on the right budget. Yeah.
Hey, don't do anything with that I wouldn't do, all right? I want it returned in good condition.
Maybe a little waterlogged, but that'll come right out.
Which I suppose leaves us with you. Rusalka says this as she is turning to Gable and says a word that sounds like static to Gable. Gable cannot hear. It is just a hissing absence of a word. And a word that Travis hears, of course, as Uriel. Oh. And if you are willing to bring back feathers for me, I will tell you where to find them, and I will give you this feather now. Though I will let you know important stakes. Your feather has allowed me to do something that I believe to be very important. And that is to destroy the sinful things that I have seen. And without it, I will lack that power. I will be committed again to being a being who can only watch. And there are creatures, there are beings who would take advantage of that if they knew. So you will need to commit yourself to this act swiftly. Is that a thing that you would be willing to do?
Have you? You rule the river?
I do.
Have you made the attempt to cross yourself?
Oh, and again, they say Uriel, a name that you cannot hear. Oh, Uriel. I have no desire to cross over. I understand that for many beings, the weight of existence presses upon them. You need to know that before I became this, and before I held the sword that you now hold, I just had to watch. I was set to watch and judge, and I saw all of the most terrible things that humans do, as well as all of the most wonderful things that humans do. I recorded them and recited them to the sovereign's displeasure. And so the sovereign raised me up, gave me wings with golden feathers and a sword that burned with his fury. And for a time, I was set to be his justice as well as his judgment. But when I held your sword, I found that because I had seen all of the wonderful things that humans do, and seen all of the wonderful things that they could be, I could not swing it. Not with the wrath he intended for me. And so when all my wings were carved away, when I had but a scant few feathers remaining, and I was sent to Sphear, I did try to slink myself into the river, to bind myself to death in a way that would release me. But I found no release, and all I could do was watch once more. Then I watched without the opportunity to ever intervene. I saw humans do cruel and terrible things to one another and live rich and full lives as the result of their cruelty, to enjoy every warm pleasure their flesh would allow, with hearts full of hatred and malice, and it disgusted me. When the stars fell, though, feathers rained from the heavens, and I gathered what I could. And of course, one of them was yours. And that feather allowed me to stretch and move the river towards the guilty so that I might overwhelm them. Not all of them. There are still people who do terrible and cruel things, and I must choose which acts I will punish. But I'm satisfied with my choices.
Oh. There are many on this world who would choose the path of the river, who can't. And unless you are able to find that path and provide it to those who need it, I cannot agree, and I must decline.
Kindred, please.
Sister, I've spent...
Look upon Raoul. He came to me in need, and I committed what I could. I arranged as much as I could to help him find the river. He will find his release. And with more feathers, there's no telling what else I could accomplish. I have seen many of our kindred fall and suffer at the cruel hands of terrible people. And for a time, I was able to punish those terrible deeds. I protect where and what I can, and I welcome without pain, without suffering, those who seek the river to its waters where I can. I am doing things that must be done, that many do not have the taste for.
I would never dream of judging you and your purpose and what you've chosen. Everything I know is hard won. And I know I have many steps to go until I know everything I need to. But I'm tired. And if I don't start considering myself whole at this moment, even knowing that I am not complete, I will never be satisfied with who I am. And I can't bear the price of taking from my brethren the same thing that was taken from me for the purposes of my own knowledge.
I can give you this feather that I have taken. It can be transferred from me to you, as any feather that you hold could be transferred from you to another. What you do with the power you are given is your decision and your decision alone. I cannot force you either. If you do not wish to take this sliver of blade from me in order to deliver power to us both, I will understand. And I will hold what I keep, and we will go our separate ways.
You will know when to return it to me.
This is an accord that I am happy to strike.
Be well, sister, and I am sorry.
Stand well, kindred, And I am sorry for what you are to face ahead. Oramar Vale. My deal stands.
There is no response for a while, because we established relatively a while ago that Oromar's strain value is also representative of their connection and control to their body operations, and they lost more than half of their strain simultaneously.
Yeah.
So, you know how a while back we had the little jaunt inside Oromar when Travis went to have a visit and I described Oromar's body or spiritual space or whatever as like an old house being held up by a thousand spider strings in neon green. We see half of those spider strings used to control the body immediately break. And in almost like emergency mode panic, because Oromar has prepared for this, has locked their body into a way where they can freestand, but they are currently immobile until they kind of get bits and pieces under control again. You know, when you if you're a martial artist, you hold like a foot stance that makes you kind of hard to push over. It's that. So the Rasalka turns to Oromar and starts speaking again, but I think for a while there is no response from Oromar while he is desperately internally trying to get his body back under control again.
The deal would stand that should you recognize within yourself a straying from the correct path, that you will allow yourself to be destroyed. And in exchange, I will act as ally or neutral observer towards Jonnet Kessler.
A pause. A slow, quivering hand of like holding up one finger.
Gable's got like him around the shoulders and like, I'm not holding them up. Totally not. They're standing on their own.
There is a slow, shaking finger that Oromar slowly manages to hold up in a kind of hold on one moment. And actually, as Gable is holding on to Oromar, they feel that the muscle tension underneath there is akin to your rock collection. Like, it is stiff. Ooh,
it's like my sky rock. This blue looks like the sky.
And then, eventually, Oromar looks up to the Rasalka and signs with that hand, and falteringly and kind of stutteringly, we shook on your assistance, but also to knowledge shared. I want to know how I can become a luminary.
Heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the moment you have all been waiting for. The newest generic mid-roll is out. That's right, this one is updated, and it's more generic than ever.
Just so everybody knows, I'm doing generic mid-rolls because I recently had a baby.
Heroes, our captain, our very own Nathan Blades, has designed a brand new role-playing game called The Ballad of Conjurers. It was inspired by JRPGs and the melodrama that they are famous for. And you can pick it up right now on Itch for just $5. You can find it by looking Nathan Blades up on Itch or by following the link in our show notes. Heroes, I've also got something new coming out. I wrote a direct follow-up to my very first book, The Ultimate RPG Character Backstory Guide, called The Ultimate RPG Character Backstory Guide Expanded Genres Edition. Basically, we took the concept of prompts and exercises to help you develop backstories for characters at your role-playing table, or really any original characters you want to work on, that use game mechanics to make the process easy and fun, and we expanded it way past the fantasy adventure genre, while also including exercises for fantasy adventure. If you're the type of person who loves thinking about your characters or characters in any property that you love, I highly recommend picking up this book. It's coming out in June, but you can pre-order it right now. And pre-ordering is super important. Not only does it tell the bookstores that people are interested in this book, but it tells my publisher that people are interested in this book, and it helps me publish more books and therefore support myself and my family. You can pre-order a copy now by heading to bit.ly/RPGBackstory2, and that's 2 as in the numeral 2, or by going anywhere books are sold and signing up for a pre-order. That is all major online retailers, every major brick and mortar bookstore, and of course your favorite indie brick and mortar bookstores. And I always recommend you go to an indie bookstore or a friendly local game store to order a copy because it helps out so many people. So put yourself down for a pre-order for the Ultimate RPG Character Backstory Guide Expanded Genres Edition today. With that said, I want to thank Lex the Lexicon Artist for joining us as a guest for this arc. In addition to our regular game, for this arc, we're playing StarCrossed, the two-player Forbidden Romance RPG. StarCrossed was designed by my dear friend and former network member, Alex Roberts, and is published by Bully Pulpit Games. You can pick up your own copy of StarCrossed by following the link in our show notes. A big thank you to all the cast and crew who were involved in producing the music for this arc. That is not just our guest for the arc, Lex the Lexicon Artist, but it's also Arnie Parrott, our house musician, Tyler Davis, who you're going to be hearing later on, James Mendez Hodes, who wrote some lyrics for one of the songs that'll be appearing much later on in the arc, and of course Casey Tony, our editor, for choosing when and where it appears in the show. And also a huge thank you to Tracy Barnett, who assisted Casey Tony on the editing for this arc. As always, one of the biggest thank yous goes to our Patreon patrons who made everything you're listening to possible by supporting the show. Let's thank them right now. Thanks to everyone who supports us already and everyone who's going to support us in the future. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky.
We come to the final card that I drew for Wei, and that is the children. The themes of the children are consequence, inevitability, and eternity. The children watch and see things you might not even notice. Although they are not strong now, one day they will be, and they will judge what they have seen. They represent a coming world that you will not control, and one that cannot be stopped. The power of the children might not suggest immediate action, but they are a promise that deeds, both good and bad, will be answered. Nothing was unobserved, and a reckoning is coming. Their themes are consequence, inevitability, and eternity.
I think this would be a great place to start exploring the relationship that Wei has with a member of the Liquid Swords. Maybe 1-2 years into their training, they form a close relationship, a working relationship. But, you know, as with any Liquid Swords relationship, relationships take on many forms between the same two people. And, you know, that can involve many different types of relationships. Professional relationships, platonic relationships. Sexual relationships are not off the table, even between platonic friends at the Liquid Swords. So, and I think that the particular branch that Wei ends up joining, you know, after being inspired by the encounter with the Black Lily, probably has more of these aspects and is a kind of looser band of people who are, they're not studying the traditions of the greats as much as they are focused on creating their own work. And I think this is a great time to explore the relationship that Wei has in this newfound family that they have now in the Liquid Swords. They are kind of a lowly grunt, I suppose, but they've worked, well, they're a junior, but they've worked for about 1-2 years, honing their craft, training. They've gotten to a point where they think they're pretty good, but honestly, still, people on the upper echelon of this branch look down on them because they kind of established this reputation after the battle as this, you know, hotshot newcomer. So the Liquid Swords, essentially, like, they knew that Wei was coming. They are very judgmental of this unrefined, out of control type of person, and they think that, like, they need to rein Wei in some way. And so the way that even though this is kind of like a pretty loose branch culturally, the way that the leadership is structured is, you know, pretty political. And so there's all sorts of kind of usurpings of power happening. There's political machinations to, like, try to knock someone off someone's post so that they can have more influence over the direction of the branch. And Wei finds themselves, you know, becoming a follower of one of the leaders, hoping that it will elevate their status in the branch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let's give this person a name.
Gotta get those names.
Yeah. Let's give this person a name.
The way that names work within the Liquid Swords, it is like a sort of functional kind of nickname thing. Like, think almost jazz or rap, you know, nickname. Like, it can be little plus surname. It can be old plus surname, or surname the novice, or, you know, scholar surname, or, like, we have teacher surname.
Okay.
And it comes.
I think I got it.
Yeah.
I think this person should be named Scholar Shu.
Scholar Shu.
Yeah. S-H-U-U. Scholar Shu. Yeah. Yeah. They're a very powerful. Oh, he's very powerful within the branch. He's very talented, and he's very well trained in the art of the swords. And he also commands a lot of influence, political influence, within not just this branch, but just, like, the monastery, the Liquid Swords network in general. Like, because the communities will communicate with each other. It's not really, like, a very tight connection to each other, but they do interact. And so what Shu says has sway over other people as well. Other, you know, people in different sects, different branches. And so Wei kind of sees this as an opportunity to not just learn from one of the greats, but also use him to elevate themselves in status and hopefully one day become one of the leaders of the branch.
And my question to you is, you and I talked about in Wei's past that part of Wei's character history is that they fell into this group that focused, instead of studying the lyrics of the great masters, they would focus on inventing their own and speaking their own. And right. That was sort of like the spark that drove Wei to, like, propel up and become powerful within these battles and within this group. Is it Shu that was leading that group?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Yeah. So Shu represents not just authority, but also iconoclastic authority.
Mm-hmm.
Because although Shu holds this respect and holds this power within the temple, Shu also holds it kind of in contempt of many of the other masters around him. As powerful and learned as Shu is, Shu got that by battling for every scrap that he could find. Because he is teaching this bold, we are going to forge our own path and make our own way. While there are, you know, traditionalists, and when I say traditionalists, I don't want you to think of, like, specifically old men. I almost picture it kind of like a barbershop, where I think black barbershops and Italian barbershops have a similar vibe, in that there is a group of old folks that hang out with each other there a ton and speak these truths that, like, but they're not truths. you know, there are the opinions of these old ass men that you kind of have to agree with to be around there. Or if you get in a fight, you got to know this is going to be my entire goddamn afternoon. It's going to take me forever to get this haircut because I chose to disagree with this wrong ass old man. So there is like that is, I think, the vibe of many of the other masters, like, you know, the masters of martial arts, the masters of economics, the masters of sailing, whatnot,
masters of alchemy, the masters of metaphysics, masters of
all these people like have this thing like, you know, we learned these lessons from our teachers and we honor those teachers and carry them forward. And this is one of the people who's like, we are learning these lessons ourselves. We are taking what we need from our teachers and using it to build something new. So there is something exciting and something that is powerful, not just because of authority, but because of resistance to authority in this person and in the school, the group that he is fostering.
Yeah, and I think that Wei is really inspired by Shu and in an obsessive way, like, wants to be Shu. Like, you know, like they want to... They want not just to be close to Shu, but to have the amount of influence that he has, and to have the amount of power, and to have the amount of technique and talent and ability. And so, in my mind, Wei has a obsession with this person, and like he can do no wrong until.
Yeah, I want to definitely see time pass Wei like. Finds their fire, you know, within the temple, like Wei in that experience that they shared with the lily, like found themselves in a way. And they, through the temple, have been refining themselves. And where they found the real spirit of that refinement that didn't have any of the tinge of restriction was in this group that was about wild creation. And sometimes you speak your words and they flame out and you get thrown to the ground in a battle. And slowly but surely you can advance that until you become a precise instrument, until Wei has shades of that person who initially bested them at the battle all those years ago. And so, we see Wei after years of training passed as they've trained in many disciplines, but found a home within this rogue school that forges its own path. And we've seen how embattled that is, how there are people from all sides coming for this experience, coming for this closeness that burns alongside the true self of Wei. And, you know, we've seen how intermingled and complicated those relationships are. They are deep, intense friendships. They are sexual and love relationships in their own way. They are this very close-knit and embattled family that is fighting for every scrap of the things that give them a sense of who they are. And in this time, you have grown, I think, close to Shu and have become something like Shu. And that is a thing that, like, we can see there is pride.
Yeah, there is pride. And I think maybe too much pride. I think that Wei gets a little bit in over their head, and just because they got better and they learned, you know, from Shu, and they work really hard and, you know, honed their craft, that isn't necessarily enough for people for them to get people on their side. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, people still kind of look down on this rogue group of liquid swords masters because it's iconoclastic. It's not traditional. And, you know, more importantly, I think people have really polarizing and divided opinions on Scholar Shu himself and his followers. And so that kind of like transfers to Wei a little bit. You know, as Wei kind of like grows in the ranks and starts getting more of a reputation, people have like divided opinions on Wei. Some people think that they are really cool and like, you know, someone worth following. Some people think that they're a poser. And some people think that they're like, you know, still the same as the person that they saw in that battle, you know, those who had attended. And some people just assume and have prejudice and just assume that this person will never change and that they are not good enough to be in the Liquid Swords. And I think that there's all sorts of opinions swirling, positive and negative, surrounding Wei. But they don't let that get to them because they idolize Shu so much, they just think that if I can just be like Shu, everyone will love me. Even though that they know deep inside that that's not true.
Or if I can be like Shu, I'll love me the way I love Shu.
Yeah.
That would be enough.
I like that. Yes. That would be enough for me. That would be like, this is who I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to achieve this power. I'm supposed to achieve this following. And I'll finally figure out what I was meant to be because I can't see into my future, so I don't know what my destiny is. But I felt deeply in my heart that if I could just be like him, then everything will be okay.
And Wei, what moment led to you discovering what Shu was?
I'm trying to think of how they would come upon it. I would imagine that they would have gotten very close.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be very good friends. Shu trusts Wei enough to share this secret.
Oh.
Yeah.
I like this because I've been thinking about this and kind of in terms of how cults work. And one of the big things is isolating you from the outside world. So even if you know and experience the ugly truths of inside a cult, like you're so embattled from and isolated from everyone else around you that even if you discover something truly ugly or acknowledge an ugly truth, there isn't an alternative. All you can do is make this weird little family that you have work. And I think Shu probably wrongly assumes that you have become so close that he can delegate some of the unpleasant things in his work to you, that he has convinced you that the Liquid Swords as an institution is so corrupt and broken that the only thing that can be done about it is to bring in a powerful outside force to reforge it. And that, of course, is the Red Feather Syndicate.
Yes. So I think this gives me a good idea as well. So in terms of an ally, I think that Wei would be the natural choice for Shu in finding more people to get onto his side and helping him accomplish some nefarious deeds that he's doing under the table and using his influence in the Liquid Swords. But he can't do all that work alone because it's so much work. It could be a lot after a time, but he is using his position as a Red Feather spy to enrich himself. And I imagine also that he, you know, being in a close friendship with Wei probably gave them a lot of gifts and was very generous, you know, in the close relationship that they have developed, was very generous to Wei and would show his appreciation with very expensive and rare gifts. And that would probably be the first thing that rouses Wei's suspicion of, where are you getting this money?
Mm-hmm.
And how are you getting access to all this stuff? Like, we don't live in a world of worldly possessions. So where are you getting this? And I think eventually, as you said, they get to a point where he's trying to rope them in to be his ally and reveals his true intentions to them, and they are not about it.
I think it might be that you hit a point where you're silently not about it, or like the offer is made, and like, because I kind of, when I think of this, especially because of the sort of free love sexual lifestyle that you've described, like this is probably a very calculated move. In a moment after you and Shu have just been together, Shu reveals what is going on, that he is a spy and that he needs your help to change the swords.
Yes.
And, you know, this, you've just shared a very close and intimate moment with somebody who, you know, you've been close and intimate with for years, who've made you feel like incredible, who has guided you on this path that you are so happy and you know, grateful to be on, who has made you feel strong and powerful and almost most importantly, like your life is going somewhere, like you have a destiny. Mm-hmm. And it is an intoxicating thing, but there is something of that like icy prickle of reality. And so he tells you these things. And I think you've got a battle coming up tonight, a big one. And in this one, in most battles, the point has always been to prove that we belong here. There are people around the temple that don't believe that Shu and your school, your sect should be in the temple and mm-hmm. constantly fight to take things from you. And, you know, you win the important ones, but there's a live and let live, especially around the battles. And in this one, he's like, I need you to be an assassin. I need you to be an instrument that takes out this person who has been pushing against us and fighting against us because they're fighting the changes that are necessary. And mm-hmm. I have turned you into the weapon that we need to survive. And so, like, that's what he's laid before you. You are going to get on that stage and you are going to disrespect, dismantle, and destroy this obstacle, this opponent, not just to Shu and Shu's future, but to you and everyone in your school. It's something that needs to be done, and he needs you to do it because you have become so powerful and so important. And that is an intoxicating thing to hear from someone as important as Shu. But also, Teacher Wei is not a fucking idiot either.
Mm-hmm. And Teacher Wei has a very, if there's something that Teacher Wei really believes in, it's opposition to authority. And who best to represent the oppressive authority than the Red Feather Syndicate that has dominated the world with an iron fist. Teacher Wei has never agreed with the politics of this, with the corporation. And, you know, in addition, the calamity that forced their family to immigrate. And so Teacher Wei has a very strong feeling against some large corporation, powerful entity profiting off of suffering, mm-hmm. suffering that's very personal to them. And so they're not an idiot. And this also goes against what little morals they have, you know, as a kind of like anarchistic, hedonistic, free-spirited person, they despise immoral authority. It was the reason that they idolized Shu. It was the reason that they idolized the Liquid Sword sect that they joined. And now Shu's trying to convince them that this is what we need to do because the other sects look down on us and don't think that we should exist. But Wei knows that being allies with the Syndicate is not favorable and it's not something that they want to support.
You know, that ain't the way. Which takes us to the battle. Please describe the battle where you turn on Shu. Go for it.
I think that this is probably like an as you mentioned, like intersect battle between all the different branches of the Liquid Swords. And it's like a yearly event that happens. And Shu has tasked me with this job of, as you said, assassinating someone in another sect, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so describing this battle, yeah, I think it feels like the energy kind of reminds Wei of that battle that they went to in Jiangxi, but there's a more like darker, sinister tone to it because they know what they have to do and what lies before them. You know, they have this like prickly feeling. They start getting this prickly, like nervous feeling because, let's see, in Liquid Sword tradition, it is, you know, kind of in the way that, you know, during a marriage, it doesn't happen very often, but the marriage officiator will ask, hey, does anyone have any objections to this? Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, dramatically, sometimes someone will say, I have an objection. Now, this is also allowed in Liquid Swords battles. It doesn't happen very often. You know, if you want to call out someone and duel them, even if it's not scheduled as part of the battle itself, you can do that. And you're allowed to do that. And so Wei's plan, walking into this stadium with many people watching, was they had to steel themselves because they knew that instead of going through with the assassination, they would call out their mentor. And it just feels very, it feels exciting. And well, it feels, the energy is there, but it feels like a pit in their stomach, you know? Knowing that they have to go against this person that they've idolized for such a long time because they just can't reconcile the morals. But they knew that this was something that had to be done. And also a little bit of fear, a lot of fear. They have to grapple with this fact that they don't know how the rest of their branch is going to react when they call out the leader, Shu. And will they fall in line and follow Wei? Or will they take his side? So Wei doesn't know, but they're willing to take the chance.
And with those stakes so high, the challenge is issued, and you take the stage.
All of this congregation knows of your reputation, so brash and inventive, the man you presented was followed and celebrated. I know what my place is, just the hedonist lacking in social graces. They say I'm devoid of morality, though in reality that's a mistake. What I'm about to say may to most of you sound like a defamation. To those of you asking for proof, I'm afraid I don't owe you an explanation. So to all of my fellow swords, hate to break it to you, but your god is a militant. Paragon of repute hides not the truth. Scholar Shu is a pawn at the syndicate. I've never known right from wrong, but I do hold contempt for authority. I'm fine with it all, but a line I will draw when people attempt to lord over me. See, the fate of the swords is in peril with feather rule. Under them will be no more than slaves. Our magic perverted, our valleys deserted. Word to Scholar Zhang as he rolls in his grave. I know what you're thinking. Wei is just jealous, they'll never be more than me. I loved you above our apprentice in friendship, you meant so much more to me. Fortunately, seems like your trust was ill-placed. I know this must feel like a slap to the face, but I have to betray you. If I have to, I'll slay you alone before you leave my family disgraced.
And we can feel how everything fell apart. How your words struck home and struck true. And you did act as an assassin that day. You did act as a weapon, an instrument of destruction. But what you destroyed was Shu. And at least the way it feels, you destroyed the branch itself. And everything that you had spent years fighting to build and protect and foster. And you know that it's not really just you that destroyed that. Obviously, Shu and what Shu was doing destroyed that, poisoned the roots that led to the branch drying and breaking. But, you know, you were the one who had to pull it apart. Your words had to pull it apart, and you knew that for the safety of everything that the temple represents, it had to be you to do it. But that obviously drove Wei away from the temple. And I think because, you know, you can only interpret the things that you have seen and observed, you don't know how your sect fares without Shu and without you.
I think that I would like to add something to this. I think Wei had the feeling that they could take the place of Shu. And they believed that people would get in line with them and recognize the harm that was being done by Shu by exposing his lies. But that didn't happen. Nobody rallied around them. People of the sect were scandalized. And they lost the center of the group. And way having had too much confidence in themselves, thinking that people would follow them, but they didn't. And without that kind of binding power of Shu, now the sect had no leader. Nobody was willing to accept Wei as the leader for reasons, various reasons, you know, lack of experience, negative opinions, and just, I mean, they destroyed the leader.
Yeah, and I want to point out, because I don't know that we've made it clear, both metaphorically and literally, the duel that you entered was a battle lyrically, but you also killed him for real. Struck him down when Wei talked about having to take out people who betray the Liquid Swords and that they've had to do it. They did it to Shu. And they did it on stage in front of all of Shu's allies and all of Shu's enemies.
And that put Wei in such a crazy spot. Because now they have new allies. Now they have new enemies. Most of the people in their sect took his side. They weren't able to consolidate that power. And it was a very familiar feeling. It felt like when they had lost that battle, that very, very first battle, that feeling of failure, that feeling of disappointment, that feeling of disappointment from not finishing metaphysical school. It was just, they felt like a disappointment. They felt like they couldn't be around this thing that they had worked so hard to build up, only to realize that people are selfish, and even the best people that they idolized and loved, they had to make difficult decisions about. And killing was something that they were never opposed to doing, which was something that they wanted to see in Janet as well. But obviously, it still didn't feel good. It felt like, a part of their identity was destroyed. And with that, they had to leave. They had to take an extended sabbatical away from the place that they called home, the found family. That was the Liquid Swords. And so they had to leave and resume the nomadic travels around the world under the radar of other people who might know them.
We return to this nomadic wandering, this isolating and lonely wandering, far away from the fires of the temple, far away from the fire of your heart, kind of lost. And these feelings of being adrift, of having part of your essential identity destroyed, of loneliness, of fear, of being embattled, of having to do unpleasant things in the name of doing what is right and not being rewarded with anything but suffering. Janet, I feel like there might be a resonance to specifically how you're feeling right now. And a lot of that has to do with that prickling feeling that I have been describing. The feeling of the pinpricks of sweat coming out, but the heavy feeling that almost restricts your chest, that you can feel when confronting something bad or traumatic that has happened to you, when flashing back to those traumatic moments. But I think the realization comes as your body starts to inform you that prickling feeling is localized around your palm, and you look down and you see how the lines of the universe, of the pocket space, are connected to something in the outside world, an anchor, a tether that has been tied to you, but not by you. In the center of your palm is a black spot connected to a sickly and awful tendril, a part of the universe that looks warped and contorted. The Mariner's Mark. You feel Wei's memory fade away, and rushing in like a tidal wave, cold seawater fills this space.
as you can see in the distance, the skies here redden. Clouds gather overhead and ghost light fill the horizon. It is not a metaphor. It is not a memory. You feel it and know it to be true. The Mariner is here.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
The history of role-playing games is weird and wild, and we here at System Mastery are determined to look through it all.
Every heartbreaker that drove a man to bankruptcy to see his vision of D&D with really specific armor maintenance rules come to fruition.
Every game where you get increasingly certain as you read it that this is all just one person's weird fetish.
Every system that painstakingly recreates how medieval life was really like, and then also you can cast Fireball.
The System Mastery Podcast wallows in the filth of RPG history. Come,
join us in the muck
at System Mastery.
You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com.
Like Asians Represent. Asians Represent celebrates Asian creators and diversity in the gaming community. Join hosts Agatha Cheng and Daniel Kwan as they discuss gaming, genre, and representation with their guests and occasionally argue with each other about the sound of Agatha's beloved air horn app.
Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. He also co-stars and consults on Showtime's Work in Progress. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at @JohnnyNBriefs or on his podcasts, Bill Buds and Dilettante Ball. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT. You can also find them streaming on twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, OneShot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him on Twitter over at ARNEPARROTT. You can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony or on his podcast, Neo Scum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Fiona Pup. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show uses a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals who were fired by the private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.